In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
There's an old saying, if you're not taking flak, you're not over the target. And what we're seeing now with the Democrats' so-called impeachment vote tells me Donald Trump is not only over the target, he's got it painted with a laser-guided missile. In many ways, the Democrats are more hysterical now with Ukraine than we ever really saw with the Russia hoax. The Russia collusion hoax was a distraction. They never really thought they'd get Trump because to get him, they'd have to convince enough people to lie and reconstruct evidence. Sure, maybe they could turn enough Republicans against him and do enough political damage that maybe they could make him not run again in 2020. And they could take the risk because the same people who planted the evidence against Trump were also the same ones guarding the evidence. And the deep state and their allies were never going to turn on themselves. But what is it about Ukraine that has caused them to be beside themselves to take huge risks now? Well, it's because they're no longer in charge of the information. There's a new pro-Trump Ukrainian president in office, one who really does want to expose corruption, not just pretend to and were paid to under Obama. $3 billion flowed into Ukraine under Obama with the promise they look into corruption. So why was it that when they did want to investigate corruption, Obama and famously Biden wanted to pull the money? There are some truly hinky things afoot here. There is a ton more that hasn't come to light yet. And then there's the whistleblower. We'll talk about him in the second half with former whistleblower John Kiriakou. But first up, I'd like to welcome the John Solomon back to the show. You know John from his award-winning journalism at The Hill. He is now a contributor for Fox News. John, it's great to talk to you again.
Great to be with you.
So we'd really like to talk to you about Ukraine. There's so much going on. And, you know, after all of the Russia speculation that fell apart, it's all Ukraine now 24/7. So I'd like to start somewhat broadly and then work our way down to a couple of our stories that you have out there. Because I have to say, in prepping for this show, reading your stories and researching others that are out there and the players and the timelines and all of this, you know, I actually had to start a spreadsheet to keep them all straight. And man, I have to say, I don't know how you sleep at night without first taking a boiling hot shower and scrubbing down with bleach. I just get the sense that we're really just barely seeing the tip of the iceberg. Do you get that feeling, too,
right,
that we're really just starting to unravel all of this?
I do. I think if you remember, one of the greatest conspiracy theories ever perpetrated by the journalism profession was Russia collusion, right?
Yes.
It took a true fact that Russia had tried to meddle in our election and then expanded it into a political fantasy called collusion between Trump and Putin. And it took 2 years and 3 years of my reporting and Sarah Carter's reporting and other important people's reporting, as well as important members of Congress like Devin Nunes and Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, Chuck Grassley, Ron Johnson, to unravel that that was a made-up scandal perpetrated on the American people. Mm. And we're at the very beginning of impeachment, and we're looking at this Ukraine story now. But the early efforts of the leaders of these allegations mirror very closely the sort of misinformation and dishonest telling of the story that we saw in Russia. The same tactics are being used in Ukraine. Start with the fact that Adam Schiff falsely told the American people he had no contact with a whistleblower when he did, right? That begins. But when you go deeper, there's an effort to try to portray accurate, true facts as misinformation, as conspiracy theory, the very thing that they did in the Russia case early on, the Democrats trying to destroy those who were trying to keep the truth at front and center. So you'll hear things on national television, major television outlets. It's a conspiracy theory that Joe Biden tried to get the Ukraine prosecutor fired. It's not true. It's on videotape. Joe Biden admitted he did it. He admitted he used loan guarantees as the hammer to try to force Ukraine to fire the very prosecutor he knew was investigating his son. Now, did he fire the prosecutor because he was corrupt, or did he fire because it would help his son? That's in dispute. But it is not a fantasy. It is not a conspiracy theory that Joe Biden used his power as vice president and used U.S. aid as a hammer to get fired the very Ukrainian prosecutor who was investigating his son's company. those are the sort of things that when you unravel them and you realize you have members of Congress and members of the major media falsely stating the facts, that that's why this resembles so much like the mess that we saw at the beginning of the Russia collusion narrative.
Well, I think there are several dozens, and I mean dozens and dozens, if not hundreds or more, of people directly involved with the corruption in Ukraine. You've got the State Department, DNC operatives, people in Ukraine, oligarchs, U.S. intelligence agencies, Obama administration, on and on down the list. Do you have a sense of scale on the number of people involved in all of this?
It's a great question. There are for each part of the scandal, each part of the controversy, there are buckets, right? There's the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. They were funding a George Soros group that was drumming up a lot of this anti-corruption message in Ukraine that targeted Donald Trump and Paul Manafort, his campaign chairman, back in 2016. So, and then you have the ambassador who hands a list of people she does not want the Ukrainian prosecutors to pursue, the do not prosecute list as it's known. So then, and then you have, you know, the intelligence whistleblower, right? The CIA whistleblower. So you got the CIA involved. You've got NSC staffers now coming forward trying to claim the things that are factually proven on the ground. Open source intelligence shows these things happen. They're claiming they didn't happen. So that's a part of the puzzle. For a period of time, the FBI was involved in investigating the black ledger against Manafort. Mm-hmm. We don't know whether the FBI determined that ledger was bogus or real because they never introduced it in the trial of Paul Manafort. You think if it was good evidence, they would have introduced it there. I think there's a real concern that the FBI has never come forward to say whether the black ledger was real or bad or contrived evidence. So, you know, in each part of the Ukraine narrative, you have a different player. Then you go to Hunter Biden, and it's Burisma, the gas company that hired Hunter Biden while it was in the midst of a criminal investigation. It was under investigation, the company, for corruption, tax evasion, other alleged crimes. And all of a sudden, they hire Hunter Biden, and within a couple of years, they're off the hook on that investigation. So each part of a very complicated story in Ukraine has a different set of players involved.
Well, I've come to believe that the whole Ukraine business blew up, meaning with the whistleblower and all, because Trump and the DOJ is getting very close to uncovering what really happened, the actual corruption involving not only the Bidens, but many highly placed Democrats and deep state who are meddling with the election, but also, I think, using the power of the government and their positions to profit personally. Certainly, we're seeing that with Biden and Hunter. I suspect that the whole whistleblower heard that Trump was looking into Ukraine, Biden's involvement, and asking about the CrowdStrike server, and there was this giant oh crap moment. So do you think the Ukraine business all happened because Trump was over the target, or was it that the phone call and allegations of quid pro quo were just more of a reason that this time they have the evidence, and so that all was just an excuse to go after Trump again?
It's a great question, right? I really don't know the answer yet. I think we need to get more facts and evidence before we make any assumptive decisions about the motive and priorities and intentions of this whistleblower. What we can say is that at the moment that whistleblower files a complaint, there were three things that were coming public that potentially could be embarrassing to Democrats in the prior administration. One is the FISA report and the Barr-Durham investigation unraveling potential illegal activity that occurred to create the illusion of an investigation that wasn't warranted. Secondly, you have the president talking to Ukraine and clearly asking for Ukraine to get an accounting of 2016 corruption taken care of. That would have burned some ears and had people paying attention, particularly career people that might have been involved in the Ukraine portfolio back in 16 under Biden and were still at the NSC, still at the State Department, still in the intelligence community. And then the third thing that a lot of people don't realize, it was in July, right around the time that this whistleblower filed his complaint, that I sued the State Department to try to force the release of records involving Hunter Biden and Devin Archer, his business partner's contacts at the State Department. I am forcing the State Department to tell me what, if anything, was Hunter Biden and Devin Archer doing at the State Department while Joe Biden was vice president, specifically related to Ukraine. All three of those things have the potential to be a boomerang on Democrats. All three of those things have the potential to be a very important transparency moment for the American people. And it's in that environment that the CIA whistleblower first lodges his complaint and then has these contacts with Adam Schiff, the leader of the Russia collusion narrative. And then the story begins to erupt. The actual motive needs to be determined. And even before we determine that, we should know the actual identity of the whistleblower.
Yes,
we don't even know who he is yet. It would be nice to have those facts in place. But it is not in doubt that those three things were going on when the whistleblower made his claim. Here's another piece of the puzzle that I wrote on that I think is very important for people to understand. The core allegation that the whistleblower makes in that complaint cannot be true, and here's why. He says the president, in his estimation, was trying to jawbone, force, pressure Ukraine to open an investigation into Burisma, the company that had hired Hunter Biden. That's not possible. The reason why is 3 months before the president had that phone call, on March 28th, 2019, the Ukraine Prosecutor General's Office, on its own, independent of Donald Trump, chose to reopen the Burisma investigation, the investigation into corruption and money laundering inside the gas company that hired Hunter Biden. That's 3 months before. So the president, assuming he has the same CIA that everybody else should have the benefit of, should have known that already, and there would have been no reason to pressure him to do something they already were doing. So the whistleblower could have known that, should have known that, because the announcement of the prosecutor's investigation was in what they call open source intelligence. Right. It was announced openly in Ukraine. A good CIA analyst would have put in their analysis report, hey, here's a contingency to consider when you weigh my analysis. He left that out. That tells you something about the quality of the intelligence product that he included as he made this whistleblower complaint. Very concerning to professionals who know how CIA analysts normally work.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to know if your nosing around there at the State Department maybe helped launch his complaint there, if you were getting close to the target, too. All right, let's go and take a break there. Biden says there wasn't a smidge of corruption or scandal during the Obama administration. Well, not so fast, Joe. More with John Solomon after this. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to John Solomon about Ukraine. John is an award-winning investigative journalist. He was with The Hill, and he's now with Fox News as a contributor for them. You can read all of his stories on johnsolomonreports.com, and we'll link that up on ispyradio.com. So, John, during the break there, you were saying that there's this big case out there that nobody's paying attention to. What's that about?
Well, you set it up perfectly just when we went to the break, and that is that Joe Biden likes to go around town saying there wasn't a smidge of corruption in the Obama administration. That's simply not true. And let's go to a couple things that we already know that are public. There was the Fast and Furious scandal, where the Obama administration authorized allowing guns to illegally cross our borders and to go into the hands of gangsters and other bad people. That was a scandal. There's not any doubt about that being a scandal. There was early on in the Obama administration an effort to direct green energy money. Remember, President Obama was a big advocate of creating wind and solar and alternative energy forms. It went to a company called Solyndra, and that company went bankrupt after the owners took the money from the United States government. That was a scandal. But here's my favorite one, because no one has really paid close attention to it. About 2 or 3 months ago, the U.S. Justice Department brought a multi-count felony indictment against one of Barack Obama's close friends, a reggae singer by the name of Praz, P-R-A-Z, very famous singer in the reggae movement. He was a frequent visitor to the White House. There's pictures of him hanging out with Obama in the White House. He was a big donor and fundraiser to the White House. The U.S. Justice Department has filed a multi-count indictment showing that Praz, alleging that Praz took foreign money and laundered it into the Obama campaign, into the Democratic National Committee. That's an old-fashioned scandal, just like the Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, China money scandal in the 90s. A similar sort of scheme uncovered by the Justice Department. Praz is awaiting trial. And he, of course, deserves the benefit of doubt until he's proven guilty. But that is a scandal in and of itself. Foreign money going into the 2012 re-election campaign, re-election effort of the Democratic National Committee and Barack Obama by one of Barack Obama's insiders. And nobody wants to talk about it.
Well, and it sounds very suspiciously similar to what they're accusing those Giuliani cohorts of doing.
Sure. Yeah. And listen, we've seen many straw donor cases over the years, right? We can go all the way back to the 90s, and there are people that sometimes hide the source of their money or take money and then give it in the form of donations, and those people should all be prosecuted, whether they're Republican, Democrat, Independent. So we should wait and see where the facts fall on all of these things. But we're talking, I think it was north of $1 million that they alleged Praz had interjected into the in the election in terms of improper illegal foreign money. People should look at that case and then judge Joe Biden. Is he really telling the truth? Mm. Well, the 2012 campaign and those campaign finance receipts would suggest he isn't.
Well, you know, it just seems like the left is really good about pointing the fingers at other people and accusing them of what they're actually guilty of. I mean, they seem to have set up this facade of being against corruption, but then when you look behind the corruption, Hillary, Obama, and Biden are the little wizards back there all pulling levers of corruption. For example, they've been accusing Trump of colluding with Russians when it was actually Hillary who was, in fact, paying for foreign intelligence from the Russians, and Obama using the intelligence agencies to try to plant Russia evidence on Trump. But I'd actually like to back up just a few years to get a sense of how all of this started when it comes to Ukraine, because you've got Russia invading Crimea, and there were these student uprisings, right, almost as if they were organized, right, that eventually overthrew the government under Viktor Yanukovych.
Yanukovych, right.
Was the U.S. involved with that overthrow, you think?
It's unclear, right? I would assume they were, because it was in the strategic interest of the United States to get a pro-Russian leader out of Ukraine and install someone that would be more friendly to the West. And remember what the trigger point was for Yanukovych being ousted. The United States, particularly Victoria Nuland, a Hillary Clinton protege at the State Department, was pressing Yanukovych to sign an agreement called the European Union. What it would do, yes, is it would pledge that Ukraine was aligned with the European Union and not Russia anymore. There was enormous pressure on Yanukovych to sign that. When he failed to do so and decided he was going to remain quote-unquote neutral, which means he was going to stay friendly with Russia, that maiden revolution, as they call it, was unleashed just a few weeks and months later. Now, whether the government was involved or not, it was clearly a long time of agitating by the United States to press Yanukovych to do something. He doesn't do it. It leads to that unrest no matter what. But at the end of the day, I'm sure most people, Democrat and Republicans, believe Ukraine is better without Yanukovych, that that Yanukovych was too friendly with Russia and that wasn't in our strategic interest. There is an enormous opportunity under President Trump to move Ukraine closer and closer to the Western world, inside NATO. We have a new president, President Zelensky, who has pledged to fight the sort of endemic corruption that allowed Hunter Biden to land a job in Burisma and many other things that we saw. Manafort and his lobbying, and Greg Craig and his lobbying. There's an opportunity for the United States at this moment to really set Ukraine on a course that makes it more Western friendly, more democratic, less corrupt. I think President Trump is trying to do that. I think the State Department is trying to do that. But these faux scandals get in the way of allowing that to succeed. And just like President Trump lost the first 2 years of his presidency defending himself against charges that just turned out never to be true, there's an opportunity potentially being lost here that Trump and Zelensky can't do the sort of U.S. to Ukraine dialogue that would move Ukraine forward on a great Western democracy reform, because there's another faux scandal being orchestrated.
Yes. Well, you know, just looking back at that, in the wake of the removal of Yanukovych, the U.S. swooped in with all of this aid via the U.S. Agency for International Development. You know, that was right. USAID, which was, you know, they've been involved in the White Helmets and a whole bunch of other things, to help this new government with and the acting president. They established this anti-corruption myth, I think, and they've got this agency, which you've actually written about. But although it seems in a lot of ways, it's more about covering up corruption rather than exposing it. But it just seems like Ukraine, that revolution, the uprising, it all just seems like it was this perfect storm for corrupt people and politicians to come together, and through which Ukraine, through which to launder a whole bunch of money and profit or steal billions from Ukraine. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we know Yanukovych, when he left the country, and many of his ministers, including the owner of Burisma, were accused of laundering, looting Ukraine on the way out the door. And the question is, you know, the British government really wanted to take the owner of Burisma and prosecute him and make him a public example. They even tried to seize his money, but the case fell apart. Why did the case fall apart? Because of the sort of political influence that can occur when a Burisma hires a Hunter Biden and Devin Archer, and they have political connections in Washington, and then all of a sudden, the world community, the Ukrainian prosecutor's office, becomes more reluctant for fear that they may alienate an American leader like Joe Biden, who, by the way, just happens to be in charge of the Ukraine portfolio. I mean, yeah. One of the things that's just extraordinary here, Joe Biden is named head of the Ukrainian portfolio by Obama in February of 14. In April, on his first trip to Ukraine, or one of his first trips to Ukraine, he meets the prime minister and he tells the prime minister, I have this transcript, I've made this public, it's extraordinary. Ukraine needs to ramp up natural gas production and I have some Americans here who can help you. And then 2 weeks later, what happens? Hunter Biden's hired. It's as though Joe Biden used his position as vice president to set up the condition that his son then cashed in on. Nobody looks at the appearance issue there, and nobody looks 2 years later when the prosecutors were moving closer to bringing a case against Burisma. They had just raided the owner's home. Mr. Zolchevsky's home was raided in February of 2016. And the prosecutor at the time, Shokin, tells me he was making plans to interview Hunter Biden in the next few weeks. And then all of a sudden, Joe Biden shows up in Ukraine and says, fire that guy, Shokin, or you don't get your $1 billion in U.S. aid. And son of a gun, what happens? The guy's fired. Those are under the ethics code, the sort of appearance of a conflict of interest that every U.S. government official is bound to avoid. Joe Biden didn't have to commit a crime. Hunter Biden didn't have to commit a crime for there to have been an ethical misstep here. As soon as Joe Biden knew the prosecutor he was trying to fire was investigating his son, he had an ethical obligation under U.S. ethics rules to step aside. Let someone else do it. Don't become involved.
Right.
When he remained involved, that's when he stepped across the ethics line. And anyone who says that's a faux scandal hasn't covered ethics in Washington for any of the last 30 years.
No. Well, and like you say, you used to avoid even the appearance of corruption, and it just looks like Biden is rolling in it. All right, everyone stay with us. We'll have more on that smidge of corruption with John Solomon after this. And welcome back. This is Nice Buy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to John Solomon. He's an award-winning investigative journalist at The Hill, and he's now a Fox News contributor. You can read his articles at johnsolomonreports.com. We'll link that up on ispyradio.com. So in terms of smidge of corruption that's out there, you've got some really interesting stuff. You've got a September 2019 article that says, "Let's get real. Democrats were the first to enlist Ukraine in U.S. elections." And you say that, yes, in fact, the Democrats were using Ukraine to meddle in U.S. elections. Talk to us about this, and why has this not gotten any attention up until this whole whistleblower?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Politico, all the way back in January of 27, raised the prospect that the Democratic National Committee was trying to strong-arm the Ukraine embassy in Washington to try to get dirt on Donald Trump.
Right.
And what was interesting about the Politico said they did a very good job of presenting a factual case, but the Ukraine embassy in Washington never issued a statement either saying it happened or denying it. They stood silent. 2 years later, I went back to the ambassador, Ambassador Chale, and I said, I want to know, is this story true? Is it not true? What was going on? And on the record, the Ukraine embassy in Washington confirmed for the first time that, yes, in the spring of 2016, a Democratic National Committee contractor named Alexandra Chalupa did, in fact, approach the embassy and solicit Ukraine to give it dirt on Donald Trump and Paul Manafort. The embassy went further and said her goal was to try to get enough dirt to convince Congress to hold a hearing on Donald Trump and Manafort before the election. So a classic political dirty trick, right? Now, the embassy says that in the end, it chose not to help Chalupa because it realized that doing so would violate the international norms to not get involved in a country's internal affairs and elections. But there's not any doubt, at least not in the Ukraine embassy's mind, that Alexandra Chalupa, working on behalf of the DNC, sought this dirt and tried to get Ukraine to meddle in the election. Now, a few months after that, Ambassador Chale himself did something that does look like meddling. In August of 2016, in my old publication, The Hill, I wasn't there at the time, but in August 2016, the ambassador from Ukraine to the United States, Ambassador Chale, took an extraordinary step, something you almost never seen done in the middle of election. 100 days from Election Day, Ambassador Chale wrote an op-ed in The Hill attacking Donald Trump and his position on Russia. In almost any other election, this would have been a jaw-dropper, but for some reason it didn't get the attention. But it's a clear sign, if you remember what the Geneva Convention tells diplomats, don't do anything that can be construed as getting involved in elections or internal affairs of the country that's hosting you. Writing an op-ed attacking the Republican nominee is clearly an expression of preference in the election. And it opened a lot of eyes in the diplomatic community. You could not believe Ukraine did that. And then there's one other important event. In the summer of 16, we know two government officials in Ukraine, one of them a parliamentary member, the other a senior law enforcement official in charge of all anti-corruption activities in Ukraine. They chose to release a document called the Black Ledger accusing Manafort of taking illegal money in Ukraine. Now, in December of 18, just last December, 2 years after the 2016 election, a Ukrainian court for the first time ruled that the actions by those two Ukrainian government officials, the parliamentary member, the law enforcement official, amounted to an illegal and an improper interference in the U.S. election by the Ukrainian government. So you've got three episodes, an op-ed, a solicitation from the DNC, a court ruling, all saying that Ukraine appeared or was solicited, in some cases, appeared to interfere in the U.S. election, all against Donald Trump. Those are things that probably deserve some more examination, and probably why President Trump, on the phone call that day with President Zelensky, asked the Ukrainians to get to the bottom of those questions.
Yes. Well, it's amazing how a court in Ukraine ruled that these guys were working with Hillary, and yet that doesn't get hardly any notice whatsoever here in the U.S. I can't imagine that would have gone unnoticed if a Russian court had said that, yes, Russian agents were working with Trump. I think that would have gotten some notice. But as far as Paul Manafort is concerned, you actually write in that article that they had invited some of these Ukraine prosecutors, the top ones, to the White House with two goals. One was to begin applying a pressure to Ukraine to drop their investigation of Burisma. But you mentioned Paul Manafort. They wanted to reopen a dormant investigation into Paul Manafort. And that just got me wondering, because we have seen this play out with the FBI and the CIA, where they set these traps for people that they spring it later. I'm curious, at that time, Manafort wasn't working with Trump. So why would they want to be opening that case against Manafort if he wasn't involved with Trump at all at the time? I mean, was that a setup where they're going to later come back and use that?
We don't know, right? Remember, going into the 2016 election, Peter Schweitzer's book and the Hillary Clinton-Russia connection, Uranium One, all those things were still the big talk of the town, right? Mm-hmm. So some people theorize, and I don't have enough facts to make an assessment, but some people theorize that the effort to get something restarted on Paul Manafort, keep in mind the FBI investigated Manafort in 14 and dropped the case, decided there wasn't a merit to it. All of a sudden, in January 16, the Obama White House, the FBI, the Justice Department are talking about restarting that case called the Party of Regents case. Some people theorize that it's possible that they were looking for some way to neutralize the issue of Russia. If any Republican like Manafort had a Russia problem, then maybe Trump wouldn't be tempted to use it against Hillary Clinton in the fall election. We don't know enough to make an assessment, but that is a theory that many smart people have opined in the last couple of years. Whatever the case is, the January overture to the general prosecutor's office is extraordinary for another reason. Joe Biden's entire story was, I'm trying to get the general prosecutor of Ukraine fired because he's corrupt. If he's so corrupt, and you're really not firing him because your son's company is under investigation by him, why would you send a mixed signal in January, a couple months before you fired him, and invite his whole team to Washington and wine them and dine them at the White House, the Justice Department, and the FBI?
That's a great point.
Totally confused. It can completely confuse the Ukrainian prosecutors. Are we corrupt or are we your allies? You're sending us mixed signals. These are the sort of facts that need to be investigated so we can learn more. Was Biden really motivated by the corruption failures of Mr. Shokin, or was he really motivated by the concern that his son might be interviewed by that prosecutor? We don't have enough facts, and the fact that we don't tells us why we need an ongoing investigation.
Mm. Well, it just seems to smack so much of what they did with George Papadopoulos, where they'd set him up, and then it's just the same MO. So real quick, what do you make of both President Zelensky and Lutsenko, the prosecutor, are they good guys truly trying to go after corruption?
Well, the prosecutor general, Lutsenko, was the guy installed by Biden in the United States when they fired Shokin, right? So he's Biden's guy. And in the 2018 speech, the one where Biden goes out of his way to tell the story about how he pressured Ukraine to fire Shokin, he called Lutsenko a solid guy. So if now all of a sudden the Democrats want to turn on the guy that they actually installed in place, why are they turning on him? They probably didn't like the story he was telling, which is there were some bad things going on, and we were trying to get the U.S. Justice Department to look at Americans on Ukraine soil. So all of this Ukraine stuff has a high degree of political relativity. You're a good guy when you're telling the story we Americans like, and you're a bad guy when you stop telling the story we like.
Go.
I think at the end of the day, the American people are smarter. They're going to look at the facts and they're going to figure out what really went on here. And I don't think a lot of Americans like the idea that a vice president's son traveled in the vapor trail of his father and cashed in Ukraine from a company that was under corruption investigation when he joined it.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Well, John, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. We've got 1,000 more questions we'd love to ask you, but we have to let you go. John Selman, thank you again.
My pleasure.
If you're just joining us, you just missed John Selman, but you're just in time because joining us now is John Kiriakou. He is a former CIA officer, whistleblower, and a victim of the deep state, where they will now engineer your guilt for you. Isn't that courteous? John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you were a victim of John Brennan's deep state. And what's really come to light in the Russia collusion narrative that I just find so appalling is guilt engineering by the DOJ and FBI, where people like George Papadopoulos, they have a CIA / FBI asset, give him some information that he then repeats to another CIA FBI asset. I mean, it is clearly planting evidence. So I'd like to get your take real quick on something that we had just talked with John Solomon about. And it's this curious situation where in January 2016, Obama officials invite the top Ukrainian prosecutors to the White House and began urging them to drop the Burisma case. This is 2 months or more before Joe actually demanded the firing of those same prosecutors. And as part of that invite, they wanted to reopen a case against Paul Manafort, of all people. And what's really odd about that is that this was months before anyone had even floated his name to Trump that Manafort should join his team. I mean, Manafort was essentially pushed onto him by some of the GOP establishment. And,
yes.
And then, lo and behold, it's leaked in Ukraine about his shady dealings and this infamous black ledger. And he's forced to leave the campaign, but not before tainting it. To me, this sounds very familiar. What's your take on it?
Oh, boy, where do you even begin? First of all, let me say that I was struck by a talk that Joe Biden gave openly. It was a public discussion at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York, in which he told this story. And he was bragging that the Ukrainians would not dismiss their public prosecutor. And so he told them, you're not going to get the $1 billion or the $10 billion. We're going to withhold the $10 billion unless you fire him. And he said, I'm leaving in, what is it, like 4 hours, he says. And if you don't fire him by then, you're not getting the money. And the Ukrainians responded, you're not the president. You don't get to withhold the money. And Biden said, watch me. And then he laughs and he says, what do you think happened next? They fired the prosecutor. So how is that not a quid pro quo?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the definition of a quid pro quo. It's Latin for a favor. And that's exactly what that was. So, yeah, this is a real scandal. And I believe it's a scandal on the Democratic side. Let me add something about Paul Manafort. I think I can tell you why they were going after Paul Manafort even before he was the 2016 Trump campaign chair. And that is because he was one of the named partners at Black, Manafort, and Stone. Charlie Black, Paul Manafort, and Roger Stone. The three of them created Ronald Reagan. The three of them created the modern Republican Party, the post-Goldwater Republican Party. He was dangerous to the Democrats. Hmm. And what better way to silence him than to charge him with multiple felonies and send him to prison?
Mm. Well, it just sure sounds, feels anyway, so much like what they did with Papadopoulos, where they essentially get that tainted evidence inside the Trump campaign and then, oh, look at how dirty Trump is.
But I spoke with George a couple of weeks ago. I had him on my own show. And we vaguely knew each other. We were connected on LinkedIn. We're both Greek Americans. We're both active in the Middle East and Eastern Mediterranean stuff. And he told essentially the same story that I tell from my own case. You know, they charged him with this felony. You can try to fight it, but the government, according to ProPublica, wins 98.2% of its cases. It's a felony conviction, but they're offering you 2 weeks in prison. So what do you do? Do you fight it knowing you're going to lose? You have a 1.8% chance of losing. You're bankrupt because you've already spent all of your money on lawyers. Or do you just take the deal? And so he took the deal.
Yeah. Well, if only you had $4 trillion on your side, then maybe you could at least stand a chance of fighting it. But let's go and take a break there. Coming up, a massive injustice is playing out there right now in which it appears evidence was planted, witnesses tampered with, even official documents changed. We'll be talking about General Michael Flynn after this. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking to former CIA officer and whistleblower John Kiriakou. He's the author of the books The Reluctant Spy, My Secret Life in the CIA's War on Terror, and also Doing Time Like a Spy, How the CIA Taught Me to Survive and Thrive in Prison. You can follow him at johnkiriakou.com, and we'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. So, you know, in the past, you have expressed real sympathy for Michael Flynn because you went through so much of what he's going through now. General Flynn is yet another victim of guilt engineering, and blatantly so. So you've got his new attorney, Sidney Powell. She's out there, and she's alleging that changes were made to the 302s. And these are the official documents by the FBI agent to document the conversation with the witness that they are talking to. And when asked whether Flynn had asked Kislyak to vote in a certain manner, Powell claims an unequivocal statement was added, saying, quote, saying that Flynn stated he did not. She writes, based on the agent's notes that they manipulated his response since Flynn wasn't even sure that he'd even spoken to the guy. So how serious is this when an FBI agent start altering their 302s?
That is verboten. You are never, ever supposed to alter the 302s because an FBI agent's notes and an FBI agent's 302s are considered to be first-person evidence. You know, if you or I take notes, we can't present that as evidence in a court of law. But when an FBI agent takes notes, that is considered to be evidence in a court of law. So to go back and change the 302s, it turns the entire case on its ear.
Yeah. Well, so then here you've got these FBI agents doctoring these by adding language that Flynn didn't use.
Right.
They're clearly trying to entrap him by claiming he lied when he didn't. So why are these people in jail for manipulating that evidence?
Exactly. That is the $64,000 question. And they ought to be in jail. You know, when U.S. Attorney Durham said that the Russia investigation had become a criminal investigation, that gave me hope that at some point along the way, somebody at the FBI would go to prison, because they deserve punishment. They deserve prison when they do things like this. This is a setup. This is sending a guy who's a bona fide American hero. Whether you like his personal politics or not is irrelevant. He's a bona fide American hero to prison for what? Because you have a different recollection of what he said than his recollection?
Yeah.
That's not what the country's about.
No, and it's clearly planting evidence. I mean, you see this in all of these crime shows and whatnot, that, you know, the police are planting evidence, and you have this natural instinct reaction to how ridiculously unfair that is, especially if that planted evidence ends up leading to the conviction. I mean, these people should be in jail, absolutely. So in terms of lying, though, because that is what they often get you on, is that, oh, you misremembered something, and now that constitutes lying and so on. Well, that's also a big part of this, because Powell alleges that the day before the FBI interviewed Flynn at the White House, that the upper echelon of the FBI were orchestrating strategies that would have Flynn talk in such a way as to keep him from understanding that he was actually being interviewed in a criminal investigation.
That's right.
Of which he was, in fact, the target. So, in other words, they're once again attempting to entrap Flynn based on their agenda, not evidence. Flynn himself is a highly trained military professional. So what happens in those interviews, having gone through them yourself, happens in those interviews where they are able to twist professionals around and make them confused?
Yes. Well, what they do first in a situation like this, and I went through the same thing, is they play on your patriotism. So when the FBI wanted to set up the original meeting with General Flynn, the FBI director called Flynn and said, a couple of my guys want to come over and talk to you. Don't worry about it. You don't need counsel. They just want to have a conversation. That's how the whole thing started. In fact, General Flynn had no idea that he was the subject of a criminal case. And just like I never knew I was the subject of a criminal case. They told me that they needed my help. And would I help them? And my exact words were, anything for the FBI. I can't tell you how much I regret uttering those words.
I was just going to say, that's got to haunt you.
Oh, it does. And General Flynn went through the same thing. And so when Peter Strzok and whoever the other FBI agent was finally get to the White House and sit with General Flynn in his office, he had no idea that he should be worried. He had no idea that he shouldn't say anything unless he had counsel sitting next to him. And then he just started talking, and he talked because they asked him to.
Well, Sidney Powell has filed a 160-some page brief demanding the government produce all evidence related to Flynn, and also urging that the court dismiss the entire prosecution, which I think they should, for outrageous governmental misconduct, and also hold the prosecutors in contempt. That really seems like such a slap on the wrist, these prosecutors being held in contempt. Big whoop. What does that mean, actually, as far as one of these prosecutors is concerned?
It means literally nothing. Worst case scenario, and I mean this is the worst case scenario, is the prosecutors may get a letter put in their personnel folder saying, they shouldn't have done this.
Wow.
That's it. That's all that contempt means.
No reduction in pay. No
heavens,
fine.
No. Not unless there was real like criminal intent to pervert justice, and you'd have to prove the intent.
Wow. Well, it's no wonder so much of the FBI was willing to take this chance then, because there is no ramification.
That's right.
For doing this kind
of thing. They have nothing to lose.
At a minimum, they should get the same type of punishment that they were trying to inflict on Flynn, it seems.
Well, to me, that's obstruction of justice. That's a felony. So, yes, you're exactly right. They should be charged with a felony.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go and take a break there. We'll wrap things up with John Kiriakou after this. And welcome back in our final segment now with John Kiriakou. He's a former CIA officer and whistleblower. He is the author of Reluctant Spy and Doing Time Like a Spy. We'll link both of those up on iSpyRadio.com. You can also follow him at his website, johnkiriakou.com. So, John, in the time that we have here, I'd like to talk a little bit about whistleblowers, you having been one yourself. This original whistleblower with the whole Ukraine thing, did not hear the phone call, but was told about it. Now it's come out that the whistleblower is Eric Charamella, who was apparently previously fired for leaking, and then, which I don't get, was rehired somehow. just kind of an odd thing there. He always also appears to have worked directly with Biden, even being invited to a state dinner, despite being a low-level employee. So when it comes to whistleblowers, does credibility and political bias matter when it comes to whistleblowers, or shouldn't that matter at all?
I think it does. You know, lawyers will tell you that motivation ought not to matter, that if you have legitimate evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety, you are compelled because of your oath to report it. But that's not what we have here. Mm. What we have here is someone who we were led to believe went through the chain of command to report evidence of wrongdoing. And that's really not what happened. What you're supposed to do is go to your boss, and then with your boss, you go to the inspector general. The inspector general does an investigation, and then the information goes to the oversight committees. That's not what happened. What happened was that he went to his boss, and then they went to the IG. But then the IG went to the general counsel's office, and a team of lawyers chopped on it. And then the team of lawyers went to the CIA's leadership, Gina Haspel et al., and then back to the IG. Finally, the IG went to the Director of National Intelligence, IG, and then that IG went to the Justice Department. The evidence never made its way to the oversight committees until they were darn good and ready to send it, and it had been chopped on by everybody. Now, the real beef that I have here is, I don't think this is a whistleblower. Mm. I'm using air quotes around the word whistleblower. I think this is a team of CIA lawyers and members of the CIA leadership who put this complaint together and sent it on its merry way. And the reason I say that is because whenever an analyst is hired by the CIA, and I was an analyst the first 7.5 years of my career there, you are sent to the CIA's training facility called the Farm. And over the course of the next 6 months at the Farm, they beat into you the CIA writing style so that when you're writing for the president, the vice president, the secretaries of state and defense, the national security advisor, whomever, no matter who's writing the article, it looks exactly the same because the style's the same. That's the style you've been trained in. Well, this whistleblower complaint is not written in the CIA's writing style. It is written in the style of attorneys. And we know that the IG went to talk to the general counsel. And so that's why I don't believe this is a whistleblower. I think this is a setup by a committee of CIA lawyers and leaders to embarrass the president.
Hmm. Well, it certainly comes across that way. What's interesting, too, about all of this is that apparently, and I've seen some differing reports on this, is that the whistleblower requirements that there be some firsthand knowledge of this were allegedly changed. Do you have any updates on that?
I missed you. The requirements for
being a whistleblower, it was allegedly changed.
Yes, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. The CIA has its own internal reporting requirements for whistleblowers. For whatever reason, the CIA's reporting requirements called for the whistleblower to have firsthand knowledge. This whistleblower did not have firsthand knowledge. He had secondhand knowledge. Plus, he had sort of a political background in that he had been on the Joe Biden staff. Just before he made his revelation, however, the CIA changed the reporting requirements so that you could have either firsthand or secondhand knowledge of the information, thus making this revelation fall within policy. It was to me just a transparent attempt to manipulate the whole system.
Oh, absolutely. So in terms of whistleblowing, is that normal that a whistleblower would be able to remain anonymous as this one has for so much of the time?
No, frankly, you don't remain anonymous. I mean, if you've got evidence, you've got to put up, either put up or shut up. And that's why we have whistleblower protection laws in this country, to protect the whistleblower once he goes public. But what I said on Fox News the other night was that this wasn't a whistleblower. This was an anonymous source for the Democratic staff of the House Intelligence Committee. And I still believe that's the case.
Yeah, well, it certainly comes across that way. I mean, just imagine if the Republicans had tried to impeach Obama because they said they had clear and compelling evidence that he was involved with the Muslim Brotherhood and he was a secret Islamic and all the rest, and then it turns out it's Roger Stone. I mean,
right.
There is reasons why you want to know who the whistleblower is.
Exactly right. Because the American people have the right to evaluate the information and to come to their conclusions. More importantly, the oversight committees have the right to evaluate the information and come to their own conclusions.
That's right. Absolutely. So, John, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here with you. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's always fun to talk with you.
There is a ton of links up this week on iSpyRadio.com that will give you more background on everything we talked about today, especially about Ukraine. As I said with John Solomon, there is a lot more coming. Go check those out on iSpyRadio.com. And while you're there, give us a share, would you? That helps us out. And as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.